You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I am Joseph Silverzweig. Happy signing day, everybody. Isn't it nice to have some of this recruiting nonsense out of the way for good?
Well, there's still another signing day, so let's not get too
excited
about
it. Yeah, but the youth class has already been solidified at this point. It's looking pretty good. I do want to apologize to everybody. I did have to call in today, but I've got my mic in and my headphones in, so I should. The sound quality, I think, will be okay. But I apologize if I sound like I'm at the bottom of the well.
Hopefully it's good enough for you guys. I mean, it's signing day. We got Joseph here. We're going to talk some recruiting. Even I'm going to be a little bit excited, even though I downplay recruiting every time I get to talk about it. But nonetheless, here we go. So first of all, quick hitters. We're just going to do schedule stuff, and then we got some football things, some staffing changes, recruiting, of course, and then we'll touch on basketball because they have a big game coming up. But nonetheless, not this week's game, but next week's game is a big game. But here we go. So women's basketball is playing Florida on the 20th in Vegas. And then they play either Hawaii or UNLV the next day.
And I don't think they've lost yet, have they, women's basketball?
They have not. They are undefeated, and I'm blanking out on her name, but they've won Pac-12 player honors each of the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. So women's basketball is looking good. I mean, granted.
Do you think they could beat the men's team?
Oh.
Oh man, that would be fun. We should have them square off. I would not take odds on the men's winning that one. They've got some some skilled and talented players.
It's true. However, I will say this: I feel like they got off to a hot start last year and kind of fizzled a little bit throughout the season.
I think the Pac-12 is a really tough conference, and their contender in the conference makes them very good out of conference.
Yeah, agree. But they've got a few games. The Running Utes, the men are playing Northern Arizona. Yes, if you're with me, I get it that you're not excited, nor am I. But on the 29th, the Utes play Nevada, whichever way you want to pronounce it. I imagine there's people that cringe every time I pronounce it wrong, but get over it.
It doesn't matter if you say Nevada. People will cringe, and if you say Nevada, people will cringe. It's our East Coast ways. I say orange and forest, and my wife is like, those aren't words, but I like them. So
yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much what we've got on the board right now. And then I mean, we'll get into it, but then of course there's the Holiday Bowl coming up on the 31st, and then, you know, more stuff to start the new year, but we can get into that next week's episode. But so football, there's been a lot of stuff going on, and then you add on today. But, you know, the first of the player or the coaching movements is Gary Anderson going to Utah State, taking at least one assistant with him in Justin Enna to be the defensive coordinator. I don't know if there's much to add. Personally, I wasn't surprised that Gary went back to Utah State. He had a lot of success there. I think his family likes being in Utah, and that still fits that requirement. And so it just doesn't surprise me that he would take a head coaching gig again at Utah State.
Yeah, it surprises me a little bit, I guess, because I took him at his word that he didn't want to be a head coach again. And it turns out he really wanted to be a head coach again because he, you know, was here for all of, 8 months, but and so that's a little frustrating, and it's frustrating to have him grab Justin Enna, who is one of the premier coaches on Utah's staff, although congratulations are due, and he's a little overdue for a promotion defensive coordinator. It's just a very well filled position at the University of Utah. It's really hard to be the DC to get past everybody else who's a great choice for defensive coordinator. So, you know, more power to him. It is a little annoying to have him leave like that. And I wonder if it didn't cost the Utes with some recruits. Gary had some good relationships with a couple of recruits that kind of fizzled out over the last week. And they were kind of 50-50 shots anyway, but once he left, they went from 50-50 to basically nothing. He didn't take them with him to Utah State. They're recruiting at a totally different level, but still frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, and then in all honesty, I think the bigger impact and bigger coaching news for Utah is that of Troy Taylor choosing to be the head coach of Sacramento State over the offense coordinator at the University of Utah. I mean, that's bigger, which is
a little bit of a lateral or even backward move.
Yeah, if you're considering pay, it's definitely backward.
You're taking a big pay cut. Yep. And I think in terms of prestige, a little bit downward. Of course, it's not the first time Troy Taylor has done that. He was quarterback's coach at Cal and left to be a head coach at high school level. So right. So this is not necessarily an unusual move for him. Part of me wonders if what he says is that, you know, he's a Sacramento guy and he likes spending more time with his family and kids. And, you know, I think there's probably something to be said for that. And he walks out of here. I heard that he was living essentially on his high school salary while he was out here. So, you know, he's walking out of here $1 million richer and with a really cool job with an 8-year guarantee. You know, and I think he's probably hoping to turn Sacramento State from a real sort of sad bottom dweller in the FCS to a powerhouse or at least a, you know, respectable team. And that's a worthy goal. And I don't know. I don't fault him too much for that. The only thing I want to say is, Don't even click on that freaking Gordon Monson article about him being squeezed out. He was not squeezed out. He was welcome to return. Coach Witt is a hard ass, and I do think that there were some personality, I don't even want to say conflicts, but I do think that there were some gears that ground together on the staff a little bit, because it's a lot of really high energy personalities and a lot of type A people, and they all work really hard and they're all under a lot of pressure. But it wasn't anything that anybody thought wasn't survivable. So, you know, best of luck to him. I do think that he made a measurable impact and improvement on Utah's offense, and I am very hopeful that that improvement is going to stick. I think that some of it was culture, and I think the culture has changed. And I think that some of it was scheme, and I think he's installed concepts and philosophies that other coaches are going to be able to carry forward. And the other thing is, we didn't talk about this much during the season because I don't like throwing coaches under the bus, but there was a lot of talk after the Washington game that Jim Harding had taken over not play calling duties, but game planning duties, that he was implementing different run schemes in particular and changing the balance of pass to run. And that was a big part of why Utah suddenly started being so much more successful on offense. I think there's a lot of truth to that. And it's a big part of the reason why you may hear different from the staff. You may hear different from Liz Abel and the communications staff there at the University of Utah. They may do a search, but Jim Harding is your next offensive coordinator. It's a done deal. And then they'll go out and get, they're definitely going to go out and get a quarterback's coach. The two names I've heard for that are Brett Elliott, who was a quarterback's coach at, I want to say, Mississippi State a couple of years ago, and now is at Texas State. I don't know why he left his SEC quarterback coach job to be quarterback coach at Texas State, because he was successful in the SEC, 32 points a game. So I'm not really sure what the story is there, but anyway, he's a strong candidate. The other name I've heard bounced around is Scott Mitchell, which I think is a terrible hire. He's never coached before. He's a pro-style quarterback. If he's interested in coaching, Godspeed, go get a quarterback coach job at, you know, Utah Valley University and demonstrate that you have the chops, and then you'll move up very quickly, I'm sure, with your experience and resume.
I don't think UVU has a football program, by the way.
They do, the Wolverines. The Wolverines, man. They can throw it around a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that.
The point is, no, don't hire a guy with no coaching experience.
Yes, like please,
Ty Detmer without the Heisman. You know what I mean?
Yes. Even Ty Detmer with the Heisman was a bad hire.
Was a bad idea.
Yeah.
It was proven to be a bad idea.
Look, I mean, if I'm not worried as much about the QB coach, like they're going to hire one. I think the Utes have, I think Whittingham has learned that he needs to have a QB coach on staff.
Yeah. And
someone with experience.
Played and coached the position.
And by all means, sure. If Brett Elliott's out there and he wants to come to Utah, I'm down with that. The one thing I'm concerned about is I want to know if they're hiring a new offensive line coach, because I don't know that I feel it's a great move to have Harding as offensive coordinator and not have a line coach dedicated to the line.
Yeah. I think it worked pretty well this year. I mean, Harding, except for calling plays, Harding was the offensive coordinator. And to my mind, designing a game plan is more difficult than calling plays. Calling plays is about feel, and you've got a book and you pick the number and name in your book or your sheet of paper. And it's a skill, certainly, but it's one that you can develop. Whereas designing the scheme that you're going to use to attack particular teams is the chess game. And you do that beforehand. And he was doing that beforehand. When I say beforehand, I mean before game day. And he was doing that while also coaching the offensive line and doing a good job of both of those things. But it would be nice to get an offensive line coach on staff, particularly if there's some rumblings that Whittingham may pick up linebackers. Is Kyle.
Interesting.
Kyle Whittingham, which would be awesome.
That's one heck of a linebackers coach right there.
Yeah. And if he does that, then that leaves plenty of room on the staff, I think, to really staff out the offense. And I think that would be a good idea.
Is that really what you're hearing? Is that Whittingham's going to take over linebackers?
I've heard it like three times, but it was just like a whisper. And I was kind of thinking about this. And I doubt it, personally. I think But wouldn't it be great?
Crazy.
So I'm kind of fingers crossed for that, because it would be fun.
Interesting.
You know, he's special teams right now. Like he has on field responsibilities, and yeah.
All right.
So that's the coaching situation. I think that the Utes. I've seen some people who are like really down, really upset. Think the Utes offense is going to take a big step back. It's not the X's and O's. It's the Jimmys and Joes, and they're not changing. The X's and O's aren't changing that much either. Harding was heavily involved in that.
Yeah, no, I am not that concerned. If anything, nope. Harding takes over and the Utes become more of a run team. And that's what we all want anyway.
What might happen is that you see the same scheme, or the same structure, that is the RPO spread offense, which really works for the Utes' talent.
Right,
but you're running out of that offense 60-65% of the time. You recognize the value of having a workhorse back like Zach Moss or Green or TJ Green or whoever the workhorse back is going to be next year. Although we're hearing it really could be Zach Moss, I guess his draft grade. He's worried he's not going to be healthy enough for the combine to grade out in the first or second round, and was thinking about coming back, thinking strongly about coming back. I wouldn't bet the farm on it, but I think it's a distinct possibility at this point.
All right, well, I guess we'll see.
Which would be, I mean, just be awesome if Zach Moss came back.
If he came back, it'd be insane. I mean, ultimately, even like TJ Green was looking really good until he got the flu or whatever it was.
And I think
we're going to be fine.
Of strength training is going to be more of a feature back.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's great. And then I think we'll get, oh gosh, his name, Devontae Henry Cole is going to be healthy.
True.
We'll get to talking about the recruits here in a minute, but I really like the running back that they got this year, and I can see here.
All right, well, screw waiting for a minute. Let's just get to it. Are you ready?
Talk.
All right, so I'm just going to go down the list I have in front of me of recruits, and let's hear what you think. First one on the list that I have is Aaron Lowe from Texas, listed as a safety on the webpage I've pulled up.
Yeah, Aaron Lowe is a really nice three-star safety out of Texas. has been three stars since last year. I would say probably had a four-star year this year. Whether or not he warrants an actual raise in rating is a different question. But he had a real breakout year this year, but was locked into the Utes from pretty early on. If you're on Twitter, you've seen him on Twitter. He's very active. He's constantly talking to other high schoolers and trying to recruit them to the team. Was really enthusiastic about it. And he's a really, really good player. It's a tough system to learn, so he's probably not a week one starter or anything like that. It's not a Jalon Johnson level talent, but definitely will be in the mix and worth talking about even early on in his career, even the freshman year.
Sorry about that. I'll excuse me. Also,
don't die. I'm not in there with you.
Might
you
be dying in studio right now. Don't even know what happened. But let me just get this before we continue with these recruits, though. Like, I will just put my statement, like, look, these kids are going to be – I don't care what their star rating is or where they're from. Like, I trust this coaching staff to develop talent, whether it's all five-star talent or two-star talent. And I will also say to all of you who are freaking out about the recruiting class, it's going to be fine.
This is a good class. People are freaking out because of the bad news with the 2022 quarterback situation. But the class is good, and we're going to talk about them.
Yeah, so let's keep going. But I just wanted to put that little statement out there. But, all right, I'm sorry. I'm going to butcher. This is the first name I'm going to butcher. I'm going to butcher a lot of them. But, look,
okay.
Lecrae Pleasant Johnson. I got your last name, though, dude.
Yeah,
I got
Lecrae.
It.
Lecrae. It's just Lecrae. Lecrae, okay. Pleasant Johnson. Really, really, really nice defensive back. Projects a quarterback at a very, very high level. Could be an instant impact player if it weren't for the loaded quarterback situation at Utah. I don't think he'll take a redshirt year. I think he'll probably play plenty on special teams at a mop-up duty. And be starting by next year, but he's the film is reminiscent of Jalon Johnson. I mean, I think he's the heir apparent to this line of starting quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, we have awesome secondary.
He's a three-star player, but a really, really high-level recruit. Whereas Jalon was a top 100 football player. He's not quite there, but the raw athleticism is there, and I think he's going to pick stuff up really fast.
Yeah. All right, next is Dante Banton from Deerfield Beach, Florida, wide receiver.
Yeah, so he was Guy Holliday's number one target all through the year. It took a little bit of, I think, some convincing to get the rest of the staff on board, but they brought him out for an official visit last week, and he committed on the visit. I really like his film. It's not, I tell you, I watched it and I thought, this is your next Marcus Williams. I'm not sure he's a great wide receiver, but he's a really elite athlete. I love his length and he's very, very strong. And I could see him being very, very effective either as a possession receiver or a defensive back for the Utes. So it's hard to say where he's going to wind up, but I see him more as an athlete recruit. But he's a high-end athlete recruit. I think he'll find his way onto the field one way or another.
All right. The next one is Toa Laumea.
This is the best recruit of the class so far. I am watching Quandre Mosley's live announcement right now on my phone. He'll be the best recruit they get if he picks up this Ute hat here in just a second. But what? Kentucky?
The kid chose Kentucky?
He chose Kentucky. What the heck? That is so weird. It's closer to home, maybe, but that is a baffling decision. Everything had been, it's going to be Oregon or Utah. Literally everybody. That's what they've been saying. And here he goes to UK. I mean, unless he's going to take the hat off or something, in which case, that's terrible. But, wow. Okay, so not Quandre Mosley then, which leaves the Utes with a hole at safety. We'll see what they do over the next couple of months to try and fill that. Wow, Kentucky. Jeez, that really surprised
All right.
me. I'm like, wait.
All right, let's go. Let's go back to our best recruit of the class.
This is the best recruit of the class. He was a UCLA commit up until very, very late, and decommitted from UCLA, listed the Utes in his top four like 3 days ago, and just signed with the Utes today. Really, really high at 24/7 as a four-star offensive lineman. Utah has Rivals has him as a three-star, but one of the highest players on their board. Really talented, more of an interior lineman than a tackle, but I look to him to make a contribution and potentially even start at right guard. He has the potential to be a true freshman starter. He's a very, very talented, fully developed, physically developed football player, and a really, really exciting pickup. Took the class from a solid, typical Utah class to, that is a nice get. There were a lot of really, really good schools trying hard to recruit him.
All right. Next one I have is Micah Bernard from Cerritos, California, running back.
So Rivals doesn't have Micah Bernard very highly rated, but every single analyst I've talked to thinks he's a really, really impressive player, and I agree. He's very fast. He's a legit 6 foot, 200 pound kid at 17, 18 years old, and has a really, really nice ball skills and hands. He just feels like a really good fit for Utah's offense. And is bigger than other running backs. Something that's been a frustration for me watching Utah develop running backs is they develop a lot of 5'10", 5'11 guys. It's a really good college back like Zach Moss, but I think the next step is to find those NFL guys who are considerably bigger, taller, and heavier than Zach Moss and John White IV and Devontae Booker. And they make it. John White IV has been playing in Canada for since the day he graduated, and Booker was putting together a nice little career backing up Phillips at Denver, but that next level kind of player has to be 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2", and this guy kind of fits that mold. And so if he can put it together and become that kind of running back, I think he could be a real really elite talent for the Utes and kind of take the running game to the next level, because they've been really good but not nationally good, and this is the first recruit in a while that's made me go, well, TJ Green too, if he put on 20 pounds, that's made me go, this might be the guy that kind of brings them up to the next level in running back.
All right, here we go. Next name I'm going to butcher: Falcon Kaumatule. I don't know.
Falcon Kaumatule. He's
from
huge.
Las Vegas.
Yeah, Bishop Gorman. Another thing is to look down the list of high schools when you get a chance. There's a lot, Mater D, Bishop Gorman, and there's a lot of really good schools that the Utes are recruiting in now. And that's great, because that's where the quarterbacks go, and that's where the wide receivers go, and that's where Utah's needs to continue to improve their recruiting. And having those in makes a difference, because in 2 years, Falcon's going to be able to, he's going to have the text messaging with his high school coach and say, yeah, coach, I really love it here at Utah. And then when the five-star offensive tackle is like, where do I go? Maybe he says, well, you should look at Utah. Falcon's having a great time there. I mean, so this kind of stuff is the kind of brand building that the Utes need to be doing. So it's great that he's from Bishop Gorman. But he's playing defensive end and tight end right now, because he's 6'8 and 200. I think he's listed at 260 pounds. The Utes are recruiting him exclusively at offensive tackle. I look for him to take a redshirt year. Utah's really, really good at projecting physical development. I think this guy is going to be a great offensive tackle. I think he's probably going to put on 60, 70 pounds over the next year, and he's just going to be mammoth, but maintain that speed and burst that made him a really dominant high school defensive end and tight end.
All right.
He's an intriguing player and a developmental prospect, but not a development in the sense of, like, maybe he'll turn into a three-star player, but more in kind of the the form is there and the tools are there to have a really, really high end, all American candidate at offensive tackle if he can put it together.
All right, so let's pick up the pace a little bit here, and we've got Maris Talavoa. Sorry, sorry to everyone, I'm butchering names.
Maris Talavoa, I think.
Sure.
I have to look up how to spell it.
Bellflower, California, offensive guard.
Yeah. Oh, this is another really good interior player. He's a freshman, but one that I think could maybe start to kind of knock on the door a little bit. Even early on in his career, I really like this play. This is one of these guys. He's a 5'7". That is the way Rivals recruiting goes. Is it goes up to 5'7", 3 stars, and then once you're a 5'8", you get 4 stars. And just like in baseball, a 299 hitter is paid hundreds of thousands of dollars less than a 300 hitter. It's the same thing in recruiting. A 5'7" player is almost as good as a 5'8" player, but because he's a 3-star and not a 4-star, they tend not to get the same level of offers and attention. But this is a really, really good player who could be an immediate impact at his right guard was an issue all year. I hear people saying that Agassiva had a good year, and on film he did, but when you start to look at the numbers, the breakdown, when the youths were running to the right side, off tackle and zone runs through the guard's gaps, they didn't get as many yards. And I think that tells you that there was a problem on the right side of the line. And I'd like to see a healthy competition for right guard. And Talavo should be part of that competition.
All right. Next, we've got Johnny Maia.
Johnny Maia is a return missionary, another big, hefty interior lineman type. It's so hard to tell. Is he going to be big and strong after 2 years of eating hard-boiled eggs and doing push-ups every morning? Or is he going to be, mission body and need a year or two of development to get into playing shape? I don't know. But he's probably more of a depth add for the youth on the offensive line. He'll see some time eventually in his career. It may surprise me. But he's a good player. I'm not as excited about him as I am about the other line that we discussed.
All right. Ben Lennon from Australia.
Oh, this is great. This is just the next best pick at punter. He's just the best punter out there. He was a very successful professional rugby player. Some kind of injury to the upper body that made it not safe or not advisable for him to play. And came to the Utes because that's where all the pro kickoff guys go, and he's gonna just step right into Mitch's shoes, and I don't think miss a beat. Probably not quite as big or fast or athletic as Mitch, but he's no Tom Hackett either. He's a football player. So sorry Tom, if you're listening, but you know how it is. So that's nice. And also, I like to see you punters get to the NFL. And one reason why Tom Hackett didn't make it in the NFL is because of his size. I predict that Mitch is going to be drafted because he's big and he tackles well and he runs well. And they like that for their punters.
All right. Next one, Samisi Lawaki.
Samisi Lawaki is another return missionary, along with the next guy we're going to talk about, Keaton Bills.
Yep.
These guys are sort of cut from the same cloth. They're both very tall. I think Bills is 6'8", Samisi is 6'6", or maybe the other way around. Tall, long, rangy defensive ends. I'm really, really excited about seeing how these guys develop because I talk about this all the time. Utah's got a great pass rush. They've got great defensive ends. We're still not, though, fielding NFL prototypical defensive ends, the kind of guys who win All-American awards and who get drafted really high and are successful in the NFL and will kind of raise Utah's recruiting profile at the position. And that's because they're not tall enough and they're not long enough. And these guys are. So once the Utah staff gets their hands on them and tries to develop them and see which one of them develops into an elite talent, you're looking at one of these guys hoping to be the next Bradley and I.
All right. Well, that kind of concludes the recruiting class that's listed.
We've got one unsigned guy yet.
Okay.
That is, oh gosh, Fualalo. He's still expected to sign today at some point. And the other guys are waiting. The one thing that I want to talk about is Darren Jones, 4-star, 6'8", 4-star wide receiver. You guys may be wondering why we haven't discussed him. He hasn't signed today. That's not because he's not a firm commit to the Utes. I haven't heard from anybody that he's wavering at all in that. So that still looks really solid. But he's an academic risk, and so he can't sign today because he's not quite eligible yet. But he's doing the stuff that he needs to do, and he's a smart kid and a hard worker. So I think it was just, you know, missed the boat in a couple of things, not going to enough class and something like that. But he should be caught up. Folks are expecting him to be caught up and to sign in February. It's never a good thing to have a 4-star recruit not sign because he's going to be pursued heavily by teams that didn't land who they wanted to land at wide receiver. So that's always going to be an issue. But for the time being, everybody's very confident in his commitment being still strong.
All right. Well, that's the recruiting class. Like I said, I mean, look, it's exciting. These kids are, you know, made the decision of where they want to attend school, and they're going to start off as youths, to say the least. And, you know, I have nothing but faith in this Whittingham coaching staff to develop these kids. But yeah, it's only recruiting. Kids are going to come and go. There'll be transfers. There'll be injuries. There'll be all kinds of different things that'll happen.
The clay that they brought in today is really, really good. And there's good odds that they're going to be able to mold some of these guys into really, really good football players, particularly along the trenches. And I think the thing for fans to remember as they're like, well, we didn't get a wide receiver today. We didn't get a quarterback today. And we got a running back, but he's not a 4-star running back today like we did last year. The thing to remember is Utah is loaded, loaded at those skill positions right now. I mean, they are stacked at running back 6 deep. They have 2 Pac-12 starter caliber quarterbacks on the roster who are both at least nominally underclassmen this past year. Wide receivers all over the field. You're not going to attract the attention of guys who want to play right now. And these guys want to play right now. They want to play for 3 years and go to the NFL or maybe four. And so this just wasn't the year for those players. And what Utah did instead is they focused on trench guys, and they got really, really good guys who you should be really excited about, who have the right frame and build and mindset to be very, very effective Pac-12 football players. And next year, when the offensive line and defensive line is performing really well, and suddenly all of these sophomores and juniors, or juniors and seniors, wide receivers and running backs and quarterbacks, are going to go, oh man, Utah's a good spot for me to go, because there's going to be a lot of playing time behind a really good offensive line in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, and then just the other thing to note is I find it interesting how much fans freak out about in-state recruits going outside of state.
Oh my gosh, this drives me bonkers.
I mean,
my analytical mind is driven insane by this particular conversation.
Well, let's have a quick conversation for the people. I mean, we're kind of running out of time, but nonetheless, I just want to say, it's like, look, if I was 17, 18, being recruited by a bunch of D1 schools, and I have the choice to stay in state where I grew up, and that's where I grew up or whatnot, and I've been to the stadium, I've been going to games. You know, going somewhere else to play and experience college, I would almost find it adventurous and exciting to do. So as much as I might like Utah or whatever, it would be harder for Utah to recruit me than, say, pick your out-of-state school of choice specifically right further south, and I would totally be considering that.
If you're an elite recruit and you said, like, oh yeah, you know, I know Utah and I know, you know, Coach Witt, I've known him for years and he's buddies with my dad, and yeah, so that would be cool, but oh, I could go to UCLA and surf every weekend. I mean, you're 17, 18 years old. That's the kind of stuff you want to do. And the numbers bear that out. And it's not just Utah. Today I looked up out of the top 20 recruits in SEC states, so the top 20 recruits in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, the states with SEC schools in them,
right,
10 stayed in state. That includes Alabama. Alabama was not 100%. It was like 60% of Alabama elite recruits go to Alabama or Auburn.
Okay.
Of the Big Ten schools, 7 stayed. So we've got 50% in the SEC. We've got, what would that be, 40%? No, 35% or so in the Big Ten. California, 4 out of the top 20 players stayed in state. So it's not an advantage to be in the same state as the recruit you want. It is a disadvantage. These are 17 and 18-year-old kids who, for the most part, want to leave. And there's a lot of good reasons for that. When you're 17 or 18, you want an adventure. You don't want your mom coming and visiting you in your dorm room. You maybe want to, like, party and hang out. And that's not in, like, a bad way or, like, a really, I don't know, delinquent kind of way. You just want to hang out with your buddies and not feel like the coach is, you know, going to see your dad for breakfast on Tuesday and you're going to be hearing it at home because we're out until 11:30 at night. I mean, it's just not the lifestyle that you want if you're a hotshot recruit. You want to kind of show up and be famous and everybody's excited to meet you and it's cool. Where it comes from, I think, is in the Mountain West Conference days, Utah needed to land every single in-state recruit they could that wasn't going to wind up going to a five-star school like USC or Washington or Alabama. And that's just not the case anymore. Utah should try hard to get the elite recruits they can, but for the most part, when it comes to elite recruits, they should be looking out of state because it's easier to bring someone in from out of state because you can say, hey, you're from California. You're tired of all this stuff. Come snowmobile with us. Come ski with us. Come hang out in this cool lodge. Oh, this is, you've got these guys from Florida. Do you remember when Huntley came here and it snowed and he was rolling around in the snow on Instagram? Because it's cool to come to the snow when you're from Florida. It's less cool to trudge through the snow when you've been in Utah your whole life.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. Is you go out of state to target elite recruits, and then your in-state leverage is finding guys who the other schools haven't heard of, who you know are elite talents because you've got really good relationships with coaches. And I think you saw a lot of those recruits today, these three-star guys, these hometown heroes who get good grades because they play for East or they play for Olympus and they're 6'4 and 300 pounds, so they're going to get a good grade. But they're not seen as the kind of elite top 100 recruits, even though they might be top 100 players. For whatever reason, they didn't get that buzz. You know, the day the scout was there, they were, you know, they had a sore hip and they didn't get the buzz. And that's the strategy moving forward for Utah. It is no all the best in-state recruits because it just doesn't work that way.
I see what you're saying. I mean,
if that's your rubric for success, you're going to be disappointed almost every single year. Every once in a while, Utah's going to land a top-rated recruit in the state, and that's wonderful. But it's not going to happen often, and you shouldn't expect it. And the youth success is not rising up.
Yeah, no, and it won't determine Utah success at all, in my opinion. So just another snippet. Now, we've got our obligatory signing day episode in, and we can go back to analyzing actually sports. And next week we will be talking about an actual football game and hopefully some basketball success can start turning around. And we'll see what happens. But until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to U Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @U Talk Podcast or email @utalk@gmail.com.